Let's return to This Week in America. Here's your host, Rick Bratton.
Welcome back, everybody. Coast to Coast, This Week in America. The Poor House, America's Forgotten Institution by David Wagner, is the only account of the history of the Poor House in America, sometimes known as almshouses, workhouses, county homes, city homes, and other names. Despite the existence in American history for nearly 300 years, the history of the people who were inmates of these institutions, as well as their overseers, has not been told. Hundreds of well-known facilities in America, including Bellevue Hospital in New York and Cook County Hospital in Chicago, began as poorhouses. David Wagner, Ph.D., is an emeritus professor of sociology and social work at the University of Southern Maine, the author of 12 books and the winner of several book awards. During his career, Dr. Wagner was one of the few professors in America who worked on documenting the history of poor people in the country, as well as working with groups of poor people in contemporary times. His website, davidwagnerbooks.net, and 7 of his books were republished in 21-22 by Gotham Books. Dr. David Wagner, author of The Poor House, America's Forgotten Institution, is our guest on This Week in America. Dr. Wagner, welcome to the program. Great to have you with us today.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to be here.
What a fascinating topic. It is a word we've heard all of our lives, but never quite sure what it meant, the right context. What inspired you to be, where did this interest come in the first place for you to write on the history of the poor house?
Well, that's funny that you said that, because that was my feeling as well. My mother would say quite frequently, "You're going to drive us to the poor house."
I've heard that too, yes.
I didn't know. I think I got the idea, but I didn't quite know where this poor house was located, whether it was nearby or far away or in the sky. Another example of that in the culture was, I think they've changed more recent editions of the game, but I don't know if you remember Monopoly.
Oh, of course.
Had
yes.
a card, and one of those yellow cards, and it said, "Lose your turn, go to the poor house." And that was one of those things, you know, you had to roll the dice a few times to get out. So, you know, was a major problem for you if you landed there.
Yes.
So those things combined with, I guess, what in my family had been quite a fair bit of discussion of poverty, even though my parents, I experienced them as I grew up, but were more working class or lower middle class, certainly never real comfortable to be, you know, to say they're rich.
Yes.
But they did both go through the Depression, my mother particularly told stories of living in different places in Brooklyn. You'd pass an address, and she said, "Oh, I used to live there." And, you know, there's like 12 of these places. And she explained that they were, you know, one step ahead of the landlord in the 30s. So I heard stories like that. And I guess as opposed to perhaps some people who negative feelings for the poor or something, I kind of felt like, that was part of my family experience, as well as the fact that they although they were born in the U.S., they were immigrants from Russia and Romania. And, of course, their parents had experienced poverty as well, both in the old country and then in coming to the U.S. So I guess it was a part of – I also had an aunt who was on welfare, single. She was a widow. And I think a number of those things sensitized me to the issue, even though, as I said, personally, you know, there was always that fear, you know, lingering.
Exactly.
But it wasn't. It was something that made me sort of curious as life proceeded, and even when I started to take up my studies, history of social welfare, it's presented sort of just very matter of factly in most histories. The English. In the United States, most of our heritage, better or worse, is from England, since they were the settlers, right? And the laws go back and were unchanged in colonial period, even in the early independent period, created the poor, what were called the poor laws. And the poor laws had two facets. One was called indoor relief and one was outdoor. Indoor was in an institution. And that was the poorhouse, the workhouse, and later it could be a correctional facility or even a mental asylum. And outdoor, it's a funny word, but outdoor meant you were not in an institution. So in other words, you got what we would later call home relief or assistance at your home. And those were the two ideas, methodologies, if you will, passed on to the United States. And in 1660, Boston got its first workhouse. And I have the duties of the New York workhouse from not that long after. I'm going to read it, if I may, because I think it'll give you a sense of how these institutions were geared to punishment and also were extremely moralistic. Now, this man's name was John Sebring, and he took over the workhouse in 1736. His job description was as follows: to set, and I won't read the old English, it's two T's, to set on work all such poor as shall be sent or committed thither and able to labor, and also disorderly persons, parents of bastard children, beggars, servants running away or otherwise misbehaving themselves, trespassers, rogues, vagabonds, poor persons refusing to work, and on the refusal to work and labor, correct them by moderate whipping, and trust, and further, and to yield a true account of every general quarter sessions of the peace to be held by the city and the county. So it was like a whipper. He was also an accountant, and he made the judgment as to who deserved it. But embedded in this, as you see, somewhat different, I think, than today, is the moralism of combining poor people and bastard, you know, parents of bastard children, beggars, this very negative characterization of those people who, for one reason or another, needed aid. And that moralism is, if you will, going to stay with these institutions for a long time. There's a case in the 19th century. It's quite interesting. And it's quite interesting when it was overturned. A woman named Adeline Knott was a resident in Portland, Maine. And she was brought in 1834, so that's a century later in the history. She is a person able of body to work, but has not a state or means otherwise to maintain herself, and neglects and refuses to do so, lives a desolate, vagrant life, and exercises no ordinary calling or lawful business sufficient to an honest livelihood. So she's going to be brought in to the Portland workhouse. Now, what's interesting is she got an attorney. And the attorney was R.A. Codman. And he argued in her defense Knott's confinement was unconstitutional and that no citizen could be committed to, quote, a dungeon or a workhouse without trial or hearing by persons with no judicial power, unquote, which sounds like, you know, a pretty good argument.
Yes.
To, I think, our 21st century here. But nevertheless, the judge ruled that indeed she could be confined.
Wow.
And he said the indigent have no claim to be supported in their idleness. Their poverty generally grows out of the unwillingness to labor or is occasioned by reckless and improvident habits. That she is likely to claim support as a pauper, and fourth, that if she does not change her habits, she would soon be unable to support herself. The overseers have acted within their authority for her benefit to remove her from the temptations to commit a crime and to teach her industrious habits so she could be restored as a useful member of society. That's pretty intense.
Well, it is, and it's amazing because those are their words from that time, and that obviously was the thought process that was accepted by and large at that time. This is such a fascinating book. If you're just joining us, our guest is David Wagner. The book is The Poorhouse, America's Forgotten Institution, book available at the usual places, GothamBooksInc.com, Amazon. Professor Wagner's book is available at his website as well, DavidWagnerBooks.net, and we'll have all that up on our website, thisweekinamerica.us. You suggest that the poorhouse had one intention, to punish the poor. How is that so? And I think you just gave us a glimpse of how poor people were perceived during a lot of the time in early history.
Yes, and I think, you know, one of the points I do make in the book, although, you know, I'm going to bring some of this up to date with how the laws change, but nevertheless, the negativity that is expressed, at least sort of traditionally in the Anglo-American heritage towards the poor, is somewhat striking compared to, I think, other cultures. There is seen to be, at least in people who aren't obviously disabled or elderly, and I'll talk about that a little bit in a minute, to be violating the work ethic. And that has a strong consistency, strangely enough, even if, you know, the times are ones of depressions or lack of work or other, you know, natural disasters and so forth, and yet the judgment is made that somebody is not striving hard enough. And that's very, you know, deep, I think, still in our culture.
Yes.
Not perhaps as deep as it was in those years. Now, one change that's going to happen, and it affected the Adelaide Knott case, is, you know, we have the Civil War and we have the 13th, 14th Amendments. And it begins after the you know, the post-war period to occur to people that, well, can you confine someone and force them to work without pay in a country that, you know, has just turned around and abolished slavery?
Exactly.
So the Adelaide Knott case itself went back in the 1870s and was overturned in Maine. Of course, some change, but interestingly enough, to some extent, it is also just a semantic change, because you still can get defined as being a vagrant and be sent to a workhouse. So I did some studies on Massachusetts, which had a state almshouse, and they had a state workhouse. And so some of the people who were just called inmates went to the poorhouse. So they were judged just to be poor for some reason. But if you were a vagrant, or if you were a mother of a bastard child, for example, then you could be sent to Bridgewater, which is where the Massachusetts workhouse was. And so the laws adjust themselves, you know, a little more modern, but still, you know, what is a vagrant? Well, you know, if you're hanging around the streets or, you know, loitering or interfering with things, you could be found guilty of vagrancy, and then you could be put in the workhouse.
Yes.
So it's not entirely a change.
There is so much here in the book, and the time is going by so quickly, and I will recommend you get a copy of The Poorhouse, America's Forgotten Institution. It is a real eye-opener. I want to go back in something you mentioned before. Didn't the poorhouse also have any inmates who were dependent, such as elderly children, disabled, mentally, physically ill, mothers and children, and so on? Many of these were dependent, weren't they?
Yes, and the real contradiction of this is it became, for many people who were not able to work, you know, kind of evidently, really a point of sadness. In the 1870s, there was a well-known song by a gentleman named Will Carlton. It was called Over the Hill to the Poorhouse. And as you go through a lot of the literature, or even chapter titles often say Over the Hill to the Poorhouse, because I guess the song was a big, you know, sort of a big hit.
Yes.
And the woman is a 70-year-old woman. She doesn't know what she did wrong. She was all her life a mother to her children. And she asks, is it to be elderly a crime? And shall I have a pauper's grave because I don't have money? And it's a very, you know, it goes on for many stanzas. You know, it's a very, very sad song. And what happens, particularly when the economy gets better, is who ends up being in the poorhouse is not so much workers, of course, when things are good, right?
Yes.
So you have the elderly remaining. I have one picture of Kings County almshouse, Kings County, Brooklyn, New York, and it's now Kings County Hospital, and there's a picture from the 1890s, and you see this ward, it all looks like all elderly, it's probably a women's ward, all elderly women, And well, naturally, they couldn't get out and get work. But unfortunately, the conditions that prevailed in these institutions, you know, they're not policed anywhere near to the extent they are today, assuming they are.
Yes.
So the elderly, children, mothers with small children, these populations that they really weren't saying they were going to punish them, and yet, you know, as kind of a byproduct of all this,
yes,
they had these very poor conditions, and eventually these kind of conditions are going to be used way ahead now in the 1930s, and there's a wonderful cartoon here. I wish I had TV. The cartoon is really a good one, and it has this direction in the road, and in one direction it says over the hill to the poorhouse, and on the other side, I think this is 1931 already, there's a post and it says New Deal pensions on the other. And of course, the Social Security Act does you know, doesn't take all the problems by any means, but of course the pensions for the elderly,
yes,
were politically justified in terms of, you know, what have we done to these elderly people, and they're, you know, all in these poorhouses, county homes throughout the country, and you know, let's give them a small pension. Although even then, of course, you had to work for that pension. You still do. You have to work 10 years to get a Social Security pension.
Well, that's the history of this is so fascinating. And David Wagner is our guest on the program, Dr. David Wagner. The book is The Poorhouse. The book available through Amazon.com, the usual places, GothamBooksInc.com. Also, DavidWagnerBooks.net. You go to DavidWagnerBooks.net, you'll see a number of other books that have been recently republished, and all that's available at his website. We've got that information there as well. Dr. Wagner, time is going by so quickly. I'd like to take a few minutes here and talk about the institutions of today. What institutions today actually came out of the poorhouse? That will answer a lot of questions for people that wonder, okay, what were they and what happened to them?
Yes. Almost all the institutions that we have came out of the poorhouse. Prisons, jails, mental hospitals, homes for the used to be called mentally retarded and developmentally disabled, nursing homes, old age homes, and really down the line. Many of these did keep the stigma that they had. For example, I was doing some research in a New Hampshire nursing home, Rockingham County Nursing Home, and the head nurse said to me, he said, be quiet. A lot of people already feel they're in the poorhouse here.
Oh, okay, yes.
Because, indeed, this facility had been the poorhouse in Rockingham County. Some states, you know, had it on a county level, some at a city level. And the way we feel about nursing homes, I suggest, is somewhat influenced, I think, by this history too, because that the people who tended to be in an institution initially were relatively poor people, or at least people who had, you know, spent all their money already. Now, that's, you know, not to say you know, every nursing home is bad or so forth, but there is a feeling that, you know, going to a home and going to any sort of institution, right, is a break with your, you know, your normal family function,
yes,
community, and has, you know, a stigma to it. Now, interestingly, I bring this way up in history because I'm also a sociologist, so I like to see what are the implications of things. You know, when I grew up in the 50s, 60s, you know, things were pretty good in the United States comparatively. And then, you know, we enter a period, I remember the dates because I was involved in some of this, where you get a new institution, the homeless shelter. And so we now have hundreds, perhaps several thousand homeless shelters just in the last 30 years. And in many ways, as I say towards the end of the book, it's a return to the poorhouse, particularly since the shelters are doing little other than sheltering people for a night. You know, it's, some of them will have, you know, you meet with a social worker, but there isn't any benefit that you accrue simply by being in a homeless shelter. And the other thing is, just as people were suspicious of people that went into the poorhouse and sometimes blame them for, well, why aren't they out working? This goes on, I know, because of my involvement. This goes on with the homeless, too. Well, why can't they find another place to live? Why are they coming to the shelter?
Yes, hear that
often.
You know,
if you go to some of these shelters, you'll see these shelters are not quite the Hilton, man.
Exactly.
They are places that, generally speaking, are fairly harsh, sometimes dangerous. Some places have put in more security. But it really is just the bare bones that we put into this kind of non-heralded institution, if you will, right? There wasn't, like one law in the 80s. There was the McKinney Act, which gives federal money for the first time. Initially the shelters are just, local institutions. And I think the other thing that's interesting, and I will throw out there because I did at the end of the book as well, is the other place we find loads of poor people, and more than any other country in the world, is our prison and jail complex. So the correctional facilities went, particularly in the 70s, and currently, to millions of people. Part of that was the drug war. You could look at a lot of the proximate factors, but we have a lot of people who, if you use the old indoor relief, if you will, right, are serving time one way or the other in these institutions. Even though as a society we do say we prefer people to be, in their homes,
yes,
leading normal lives.
But the reality sometimes different than that. It's so fascinating that I was going to ask at the end, and you've answered that question, what progress have we made? And boy, the harshness, the punishment of what you talked about earlier,
yeah,
in the older institutions,
yeah,
we can see being sort of recirculated now. The book is so well,
yeah,
written, The Poorhouse by Dr. David Wagner, our guest on the program. This is one of seven books republished by Gotham Books. Information on this and all the other books at Dr. Wagner's website, which is davidwagnerbooks.net. The books available, all of them, at Amazon, GothamBooksInc.com. What are you working on now? You've done such an excellent job of bringing out a number of issues, relevant issues in social welfare. Are you working on another book?
I actually am taking a break now. But I did want to comment in terms of the last sentence we were saying. Yeah, I my feeling is that history is cyclical.
Yes.
Certainly there's progress, but then and I think a lot has to do with the economy and which then affects the culture. And I think as I said, in your 50s and 60s, and you remember, actually, I just people could get work, but it sort of changed, and unfortunately now with the economy again, and times get tougher, and those people who don't have much resources gets a lot tougher, I think, for them.
The book is an important read. It's one of seven books republished by our guest, David Wagner. The book available in the usual places and his website, davidwagnerbooks.net, GothamBooksInc.com, the publishers, Amazon.com as well. Dr. Wagner, a pleasure having you on the program. So much more we could talk about. Hopefully we'll have an opportunity to continue this conversation.
Yes, thank you very much. It was a very good discussion.
Thank you for being with us on the program. It's Dr. David Wagner. The book is The Poorhouse, America's Forgotten Institution. Information on our website, thisweekinamerica.us, and we're back on today's program right after these messages.
You're listening to This Week in America with Rick Bratton. More after this.